Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Early voting is underway as we count down to the midterm elections. There are only 7 days left. What is sending you to the polls? Are there any issues that are perhaps keeping you away? Well, we're talking about voter motivations tonight. My guests are Dr. Kenesha Grant, Assistant Professor of Political Science here at Howard University, and Rashad Robinson, spokesman for the Color of Change Political Action Committee. Lines are open. We're talking politics and the black vote tonight. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Want to hear from you. Lines are open. Dr. Grant, good to see you.
It's good to see you too.
Welcome back.
I missed you.
Yes, I have certainly missed your big brain. Yes, indeed. I'm looking forward to hearing from you tonight. Rashad, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
It's great to be with you.
Okay, so Dr. Grant, what is driving black voters to the polls in your opinion?
Donald Trump. And the hatred emanating from him and some members of his party, I think, will be the top thing driving folks to the polls in this election. If you are from Florida, Georgia, or Maryland, you might be driven to the polls by the historic opportunity to vote for a black person to be your next governor. I think that we are also concerned about some of the bread and butter issues concerning the economy and how these tax breaks are going to extend to folks who don't make a bunch of money. As well as some of the issues around healthcare and pre-existing issues.
It's been a really interesting couple of hours. It's been an interesting couple of days, weeks, and even months, because there are issues, Rashad, that keep popping up today. I should say over the past 12 hours or so, we heard from President Trump where he wants to challenge the birthright clause of the 14th Amendment, guaranteeing citizenship for those that are born in this country. Is that one more issue that will bring voters, black voters, to the polls?
Well, I think the Donald Trump does a lot of work to distract us, I think, from the set of things that are actually possible and could happen. You know, he actually, through executive order, can't do what he says he's going to do, but it's a way for him to move the conversation and change the conversation. And I do think, to the point earlier, that for many folks, the importance of voting, of turning out, just the recognition of the fact that we do have choices, even if the choices may be deeply imperfect, that what can happen when we don't win at the polls. I fundamentally believe that voting doesn't change everything, but if we don't win elections, it changes anything. And so what we've got to recognize is that there will be more of these issues that the Trump administration and Donald Trump himself will throw out over these next 7 days, red herrings to sort of take our eyes off of what's actually at stake. And I do think that there's a whole set of issues that are mobilizing folks right now, and just a fundamental recognition that we need greater political power to hold this administration accountable.
But let us say, as you said, the president may throw out a red herring, but I don't think it is an overstatement to say that there are a great many Americans, some in his base, that may need a civics lesson, because they don't know that, for example, challenging the 14th Amendment, the birthright clause, is something that cannot be done with the stroke of a pen through executive order, because he has been able to do so much through executive order.
Right. And it, like, you think about it, this doesn't make sense. If it's the case that you get your citizenship through something other than your birthright, then what are we giving it through? Like, in this case, everybody might be eligible for it, including people who are immigrating from somewhere else. So it doesn't make sense on the basis that he can't do it. And it doesn't make sense just kind of on its face.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the black vote. What is motivating you to go to the polls? Are you sitting this one out? I want to hear from you. Lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Nidria calling from
Nidria.
Thank you, Nidria. What's on your mind?
Well, this topic of education is always on my mind, and it's on my mind because it's basically been pushed with a broom under the rug. I mean, we had all of these comments by Bessie DeVos and the education, the Secretary of Education, but nobody has said anything about the Every Student Succeed Act that President Obama had put forth, in which President Trump has dismantled. If you even look it up online, you can't find it. President Trump, his office information comes up, but nothing else comes up. So I just want to know, what is the state of our education system in the United States of America? I fear for my child, who is only 6 years old. I fear that she won't have the same opportunities that I've had. I fear that the schools are becoming more segregated, even with the creation of charter schools. I just don't feel like the country is moving in the right direction as far as our education system, and that's what's driving me to the poll, because right here in Washington, D.C., Mayor Muriel Bowser, we're trying to figure out now whether she's going to give up some of her autonomy and choosing the chancellor of Washington, D.C.
Let me stop you there and see what my panelists have to say about that. Rashad, we have not heard nationally a lot of conversation about education. Is that a national issue, or is that a local issue that is sending black voters to the polls?
We've certainly heard education consistently come up around the country since January. Over 12,000 people have shown up to in-person Color of Change events in 19 cities. And, you know, over these last several months, as we've been building up our voter contact work, you know, we, in partnership with a coalition called Win Justice, which Color of Change is one of the lead members of, have contacted and had conversations with over 2 million voters. And so, you know, these conversations that we've been inside of, we have heard education come up and people's concerned with what's happening with the education secretary, but also they're concerned at a local level about how their schools will be supported, about parents' role in ensuring that schools are fully funded. All of these things are deeply important. You know, Donald Trump was a change the rules candidate. And changing the rules is a different type of archetype. You know, we may have disagreed with the politics of previous education secretaries, but we knew they actually knew something about education. Same thing with housing and urban development. Same thing with so many of the people that he's put in power. And that is why really understanding that we've got to mobilize in numbers like never before, because right now we simply do not have the checks and balances necessary to even hold someone like Bessie DeVos, who is the Secretary of Education, accountable, to do the type of investigations about the rollbacks and the policies, and some of which violate federal law that her administration is trying to take on. And so this election is so critical in our ability to have the type of power to demand investigations, to demand accountability, and we are hearing that from people, and I think that should be something that motivates and mobilizes people to the polls.
But Dr. Grant, to Rashad's point about education, let's talk about, you know, when we hear the big talking points for, you know, from Democrats, they're not talking about education, they're talking about health care. The big education stories that may be on the minds of voters are salaries, higher salaries for teachers, and guns in school,
right.
arming teachers. Are those issues that may drive, for example, black voters to the polls, or have they gotten lost in some of the bigger national issues.
I think that's wonderful framing for it, and I think Rashad had it right before when he was talking about the things that Donald Trump proposes as red herrings that are designed not only to take our eyes off the ball, but to drive up voter turnout among white populations. The truth is that the members of Congress, the Secretary of Education, the President of the United States can do work on education, but the vast majority of the work that happens in education happens at the local level, happens at the state level. And so to the extent that you're looking for those kinds of conversations in D.C., Nadria is right to be looking at the mayor for those kinds of conversations. You should be looking to your governor to figure out what they're talking about. What are the people who are running for school board talking about? And you can see in some of the gubernatorial candidates, them talking about higher salaries for teachers, which drives out voters who are teachers, many of them black, and drives out voters who are black and want to have their students in nurturing classrooms. So I do think that education is important, but I think we have to be kind of careful about where we look for information about education and where we look for campaigning about education. And we should expect to see that more so at the local and state level than at the national level.
Nadria, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. What is driving you to the polls? Are you going? What are the critical issues that you are making your voice heard on? What about maybe perhaps you're sitting out? Is there a reason that you are? I want to hear from you. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things that came out today that was really kind of astonishing, 5 days of early voting in the state of Maryland, 370,000 Marylanders have already voted early, a 135% increase from the same time in 2014. What does that say to you, Dr. Grant?
It says to me that folks are paying attention. It says to me that folks in Maryland understand that they have a kind of unique situation where they have a very popular governor. They have a black candidate running that presents some kind of interesting situations. But I think this also says to me that people are concerned about politics at the national level. And folks who had not participated, maybe they weren't registered to vote before, maybe they weren't interested in politics before, are understanding that they can't sit on the sidelines anymore. And they're turning out to have their voices heard in ways that they didn't think they needed to do so before.
Mm-hmm. And the same question to you, Rashad, when you see that kind of increase in early voting in a blue state like Maryland, what does that suggest to you?
Well, it suggests a deep level of anticipation and excitement. It's actually what we're seeing as we reach people at the doors, not just in blue states, but across the country. You know, the excitement that we're seeing right now in Florida for something like Amendment 4, which would restore voting rights to people with felony convictions, which really has the potential to, you know, usher in the participation of a whole generation of folks who have been excluded from being able to cast their votes. The excitement we're seeing at the door, there's organizations that have traditionally not leveraged voting rights as a key issue as they knock on the folks, and they're seeing the excitement for this issue and how many people are talking about how it affects other folks. So across the board, we're seeing a different type of excitement than we normally see in midterm elections. And we really walked into this election cycle with that theory. And so what we've tried to do is focus all of our voter contact work really on contacting what they call low propensity voters in the sort of electoral world. And those are folks who may have voted in one election or two elections, but oftentimes missed elections. Many of these folks voted for Obama once or twice, but haven't participated in a lot of other elections. And we have this theory that if we can sort of change the denominator, the sort of base of people who pollsters and other folks think will turn out to vote, that oftentimes, as a result, the consultants leave them off. They don't talk to a lot of these. But recognizing that many folks, and particularly black folks, have so much at stake in this election. And if we can reach them peer-to-peer, black person to black person, have deep conversations about what's at stake, and mobilize those folks to the polls, what we can change fundamentally who folks think is supposed to vote.
Whoops, we just lost Rashad, our producer is going to try to get him back, but he left us with quite a bit to think about, and we're going to pick back up after the break. But we also want to hear from you. What are the issues that you are most concerned about? What is it that is driving you to the polls, whether you've done early voting, whether you've decided to do absentee voting, whether you are waiting with great anticipation for Tuesday morning? I want to hear from you. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Voter motivations for the black vote. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm, Jeff Brown hosting, of course, continues on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back with this conversation on Sirius XM in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about voter motivations, the black vote. Just 7 days left before the midterm elections. What is sending you to the polls that are keeping you away? We're talking about it. My guests are Dr. Kenesha Grant. She is an assistant professor of political science here at Howard University, and Rashad Robinson, spokesman for the Color of Change Political Action Committee. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to go back to the phones. I believe, is this Kevin or is this Tony?
Kevin.
Calling from D.C. How are you, Kevin? What's on your mind?
I'm doing fine. And one of the things that brought me out to vote, and actually, I'm on the other side.
What's the other side?
I'm voting because the immigration issue has hit me really big. I'm a construction worker,
mm-hmm.
and I see the immigrants taking a lot of the jobs. They have taken a lot of the middle-class homes. They're really costing our taxpayers a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? So these people come and they get free services that we put our money in. You know what I'm saying? They get the services. They haven't been here. You know what I'm saying? It's costing us a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? So there's some things that need to be done about our immigration system.
So
it's hurting our school system. You know what I'm saying? You know, our kids can't get the education they need because you have to have bilingual people to teach. You know what I'm saying? It's just a lot of issues with the immigration right now.
So when you say you're on the other side, where are you placing your vote next week?
Well, I don't particularly care for Donald Trump's mouth,
mm-hmm.
but I do think a lot of the things that he's trying to do for the country would work if we could just get him out of his mouth, get him out of his idiotic talking, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like sanctuary cities, you know, I have family members that are petty criminals. There's no sanctuary for them.
Interesting. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Your thoughts about that, Rashad?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of what's happened at the federal level for years, but and decades actually, but particularly the last couple of years, is this scarcity model. This scarcity model that comes from an administration that will give tax breaks to the wealthiest Americans and then try to balance the budget on everyone else, try to balance the budget on the most vulnerable, and then come back to folks and say the reason why your jobs are gone is because of immigrants, rather than having a job and having a real conversation about how jobs are being shipped overseas and corporations are giving tax breaks, having a real conversation about these sort of massive giveaways to big business and corporations and how that is sort of fueling scarcity models, scarcity in funding our education,
scarcity in funding sort of job growth and development in our communities, scarcity in funding infrastructure that could provide more jobs. And so to the extent that as long as we have this sort of zero-sum game, that that if immigrants are getting jobs and that's going to hurt black people, what ends up happening is that we end up in this fight while the billionaires, vast majority are white, take everything. And we are sort of in this back and forth battle. And I do think that what's been exciting this election season for me is to see a new generation of candidates emerge that are able to sort of reject that notion. And whether it's Beto O'Rourke in Texas, my brother Andrew Gillum, who I've known for years, in Florida, Stacey Abrams, who I've known for years as well, running in Georgia, and many others who are presenting a frame and a narrative and bringing people into a Big Ten. And I just want to recognize that Donald Trump's policy, Donald Trump, who spent years exploiting, hiring, and then exploiting undocumented workers in all of his businesses, which still hire and exploit undocumented workers, is not going to be the ambassador for some sort of immigration policy that makes it so that black people get more jobs. That at the end of the day, his policies are going to help more billionaires rake in more money and use our interest in fighting one another to serve it.
Before I have Dr. Grant talk, I do want to pick up on something you said, because you mentioned, you know, Abrams in Georgia, Gillum in Florida, but you forgot John James in Michigan. He's black and he's a Republican. Not every black person is running a Democratic or progressive ticket. So, you know, is that upsetting?
I definitely did not mention someone that has swastikas in his ads. Mm-hmm. So, no, I definitely did not mention him. I mentioned candidates not just because of their race, but because of who they are, what they stand for, their visionary platform, and also candidates that are attracting an audience and have the potential to win races that people didn't expect them to win. And so, I could go on a longer list.
I'm sure, besides
the one I mentioned, but the candidate you mentioned in Michigan, mm-hmm. I didn't mention him on purpose.
Yeah, and I guess my question about, you know, the John James and the John James of the world, are they upsetting the apple cart by being like you know, based on, you know, some of these, you know, these things that, you know, like the swastikas and other things? Some people would say that certainly, anti-black, racist, and the whole bit. Is that counterintuitive?
I think a lot of the stuff that's going on is counterintuitive. And so I'm gonna be a nonpartisan for a minute here to kind of think through this. So if it's the case that immigrants are coming into America and taking jobs, it cannot also be the case that they are not paying taxes. Like, let's ask them to see their pay stubs. If they are taking jobs, then they are paying taxes. I would agree with Rashad that this is not a scarcity model. It doesn't have to be the case that the folks who are not super rich are living in a place of want or need. There's enough money at the top that if you recirculate it, we could all probably be okay. And I live in Washington, D.C., and I don't know what it means to be middle class, but I know how much it costs to have a house here. And I have seen my neighborhood transition, and I'll tell you, it wasn't the immigrants who came in and bought $800,000 homes next to my little puny condo. It was a group of other people, and they were facilitated in their purchase of the homes by developers who came in. And so I think it's okay to think kind of separately or differently than the kind of masses of black people, but just be sure that you are bringing all the information and all the logic to bear when you make those decisions to see whether what people are presenting you with is consistent. And I think in the case of having immigrants who take jobs and then don't pay taxes, that just doesn't work out. If they are working, then that means they're paying taxes and contributing to your economy in the same way that you are.
But let's not even talk about paying taxes. One of the things that Kevin said, the caller recently, he was talking about brown people, you know, of Latin descent working construction jobs that he can't get. Anecdotally speaking, we've seen a lot of these, a lot of the construction east of the river where it still remains predominantly African American, but the people that are working on those sites are not. Does he have a point? And is the racial divide not so much black and white, but black and brown?
I think he might have a point. I haven't been on enough sites to be able to make strong claims about what happens there. But I would encourage Kevin that if he observes a situation where people are hiring brown people and not hiring black people, then the response is not to be mad at the brown people. The response is to be mad at the politicians who make rules about how you hire people and how you pay people and whether you can hire people under the table. Like, who's checking that? Don't be mad at your Hispanic brothers and sisters about the fact that they come and work. Be mad at the person who is supposed to be regulating your rights as a worker and make sure that they are accountable to the people who own these businesses. And make sure that those people who own the businesses are the one who are giving the jobs. Don't be mad at the brown people. I think we could get more accomplished working with them than working against them.
Let's go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tony calling from Columbia. Thanks for calling, Tony. What's on your mind?
Yes, there's been a record of early voting.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out, does that benefit the Democrats and or the Republicans?
Depends on where you are, I would imagine. What do you think about that, Rashad?
Historically, they say it generally benefits Democrats because traditionally black and brown communities have done better jobs at mobilizing and organizing and leveraging early vote. That is a rule that is ripe for being broken, and I don't think that we can simply look at early voting and think that we're in the clear, but early voting in a lot of places has benefited folks that have less opportunity to take off work on election day, work jobs with schedules that move. Black communities in particular have built really strong mobilizing vehicles around programs like Soul to the Polls on Sundays, you know, with black churches to really mobilize black folks to the polls on Sunday after church service. So there have been a lot of indicators over the years that it has helped Democrats where those communities have traditionally voted for Democrats. But I will say that we have learned a lot over the last couple of years about what mobilizes people and what doesn't. And we've also had a lot of times where the sort of traditional political establishment has been surprised by the results, particularly the 2016 result, where a lot of folks were surprised, but those of us who were on the ground in communities were actually seeing Republicans, you know, working class white folks showing up at rates that were, you know, alarming.
Well, would you agree with that? Because I'm one of the things I do remember is that, you know, 1994, there was a huge revolution.
Right.
The Contract with America. Democrats lost House. They lost the Senate.
Yeah.
And there was a Democratic president. So is it that high turnout during midterms affect progressives or Democrats, or is it that high turnouts during midterms really impact sometimes a shift of power from the political power that the ruling political power, and might we expect a shift? History says we've seen that.
I think we should be learning from the past, but we in some ways have to erase what we know because Donald Trump is a whole other thing. And so historically, I think Rashad is right that we think about early voting as something that benefits Democrats, benefits low-income folks, and other people who don't have time on Tuesday to go vote. But this year, Republicans have been leading in their mail-in ballots and in their in-person voting ballots. And I think part of that is to do with the president making these claims about this migrant caravan that's going to come and take all your jobs, and the president making these claims about birthright. And if you like these things and if you want to protect America, then you should go out early. So that whole thing is new. It's a thing that we haven't really seen before. I think that black people especially should be kind of careful not to take this thing for granted, right? Like, do not wait till the last minute. If you have time tomorrow, if you have time the next day, go vote now. Don't take for granted that somebody else is going to do it. Don't take for granted that the weather's going to be good on election day, that you're going to have time. Like, go do it now.
Yeah. There we go. Tony, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Virginia, calling from Virginia. Virginia, stay with us. Plus, so much more to discuss about the black motivational factors for this midterm election. What do you do about voter suppression if you suspect that it is an issue where you vote? We'll talk about that in just a bit. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. We continue our discussion about voter motivations for black voters. What's getting you to the polls? Back to the phone lines. Virginia, calling from Virginia. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Good evening to everyone. So what's on my mind and what's really driving me to voting early, well, with the time provided, is the bigotry and the ignorance. And then it's also the cost of living, how it's supposedly supposed to increase starting next year. And as a young woman, as, you know, growing into this world, I start to come in realizing that, you know, it's hard. It's hard out here for a person to finish college and to finish within or trying to do something with their life, along with having to deal with ignorance all over, from not just in the young community, but also in the, you know, the generations before, that everybody is subjected to having to be this person or live a certain life because their inspiration. And some people look at Donald Trump as an aspiring man, and he does such wonderful things. But then you look and you listen and you hear the things and the comments he makes. It's like, it's baffling, and it's, you know, just altogether just, you know, rude and not what this country is built to be and what it's known to be, a chance for people to really develop and grow. But then you have, we're basically reliving 1960, and I think that's ridiculous.
Virginia, thank you so much for your comment. You know, Virginia just called, the president rude, but she's not. Because, you know, she was very, 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 very polite.
Right.
You know, but does she make a point? Is it, can it be the vote against racist vitriol locally, nationally? Is that one of the big things that drives people to the polls, Rashad?
I think it can drive people to the polls in the short term. But what we've been really trying to do is try to build sort of a different model, one that is actually centered on aspiration and joy. And that's really hard in this moment. But the reason why we get in elections at Color of Change PAC is not because we want to get politicians jobs, not just because we hate the politicians that are in office, not because we want to help leaders move up the ladder, but because we have a vision for a better tomorrow for our community, for our people, for our children. And we recognize that voting is one of the ways to allow us to get the people in office that we can hold accountable to get us there. And so the ways that we've been inviting folks into the room, and I was just in Atlanta where we had 400 volunteers in a room doing peer-to-peer text messaging, contacting voters throughout the state in service of trying to get them to turn out for not just Stacey Abrams, but also Lucy McBath, who's running for Congress in the Georgia 6th. We were doing that turnout, but people were joyful about their participation, even in the face of so much pushback. And so I do think that pain and outrage can mobilize people to action, but it's not always sustainable. And what we are also trying to do is build a 365-day vision for participation, one that recognizes that people have to turn out, but then afterwards we're going to work to build the type of accountability that makes people's lives better. Otherwise, we overpromise people what can actually be done through elections alone. We make people believe that all we have to do is send leaders into office and everything is wrapped up. We've got to make sure that we make voting a piece of what we have to do. And then we constantly communicate back for people how their lives actually matter.
were made better. One of the things we did quickly on this primary season, and what makes us a lot of our work much different, is that, you know, we engage in primaries with a recognition that, like, this is not just about supporting Democrats. This is not just supporting a political party, but sometimes we have to get into primaries and kick people out of office who should be serving us. And, you know, most recently, our organization, the Color of Change PAC, along with our local friends in St. Louis and in Ferguson, went in and were able to mobilize particularly young black folks and their allies of all races to mobilize in that primary and kick out the 27-year incumbent, Bob McCullough, who refused to bring charges against the killer of Mike Brown, and be able to translate that protest into power, putting Wesley Bell, a young black first-time district attorney in office, who we've already started building a first 100-day plan for, recognizing that we helped him get in office and we can take him out. And I think that building a new vision for how we participate in elections, how we make this all matter, is part of what we have to do if we're going to be asking people to vote and telling them how important their vote is. We need to make sure that it matters in terms of the real changes, not just in stopping the bad things, not just in stopping the pain, but being able to cast a better future for what we can actually achieve.
But with that said, Dr. Grant, one of the biggest issues that we have seen bubble up, and this isn't a recent thing, but it has caused a lot of consternation, is the specter of voter suppression. We have seen that in Georgia. There have been questions about it in Virginia. Angela Rye said that the progressive pundit said on her show earlier this week, if your vote wasn't important, then why do you think they're trying to take it from you?
Right.
And I think that was just so profound.
Yeah, I share her opinion about that. I think Rashad is right that we have work to do on the governing side, but I think we should all be very focused on the fact that that vote matters. And you can't do the governing if you don't win the election. And the person who wins the election is the one with the most votes. And so you got to turn out to vote. I think this voter suppression thing is something that we got to watch out for, because sometimes you don't see it coming. You sent your ballot in, you thought it was in, you thought it was fine. You need to check. Get online and check to see whether they accepted your ballot, whether they received that ballot, because voter suppression is real. If you show up at the polls and you're supposed to have some documentation that you don't have, ask for a provisional ballot. I think the vote is very important, and we can't lose sight of the fact that voting matters, and we can't get to the governing unless we do the voting first.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you about, this is what we were talking about during the break. Don't fall for the media okie doke about polls.
Thank you so much.
Because we have seen that what we've depended upon for decades, and the polls have historically, short of Dewey versus Truman, the polls have historically been pretty accurate until 2016,
right?
And then again, some of the other oopses, because some people don't tell the truth, for example.
Absolutely, they don't tell the truth. My friend Andrew Gillum, who we've already talked about, who's running for governor, says polls don't vote, people do. And it was amazing to be in Florida with him on primary night, because the pundits didn't see it coming. But if you spent any time in Florida talking to people, asking them how they felt, they would have told you that they were voting for Mayor Gillum to be the next governor of the state of Florida. But the pollsters never called to ask them what they believed. And so I want to make it clear to the people who are listening that you have to go and vote, that you can't depend on what the poll says to represent you in the future, and that you can't depend on what the polls say to articulate your opinions unless you have actually talked to a pollster. I have not talked to one. I don't know if you've talked to one, but the likelihood that they're going to call you on your cell phone to have a long conversation with you about who you're voting for is low. And so you got to take that information with a grain of salt and do your civic duty for yourself.
Rashad, how do you address the people that are apathetic about voting, but particularly people in, you know, in black communities. I remember when I was covering the Gina 6 situation in Gina, Louisiana, back in 2008, and talking to young black men in this small rural community and just asking them about voting, and a lot of them just kind of, you know, they shook their heads. Now, granted, that was in that was way back in 2008, before Obama was a household name. But even today, there are still people that are apathetic, particularly young people. How do you address that?
Well, what we've really been trying to concentrate is this theory that it's not going to come from the party. It's not going to come from even maybe the candidate, but some candidates can be inspiring, like Andrew or Stacey. And it's not even going to come from an organization directly. People are not joiners the way they used to. And so what we've really been trying to do is mobilize this sort of army of volunteers, about 4,000 volunteers this election cycle that have been out knocking on doors, having real conversation, really trying to recruit, black folks to talk to other black folks who want to be engaged, having black women's brunches and black dad's barbecues in places, and then training folks to actually do the sort of political conversation. We've gone into barbershops with T.I. in Florida. We've done door knocking with other folks, other influencers. But all of that really trying to create a kind of excitement around the possibility of voting, but recognizing that folks need to hear from their peers. They need to hear one-to-one. And it just can't be the messaging of, like, people died for the right to vote. It can't just be the messaging of, like, do it because of history. We actually have to paint a future for people about why their participation matters, and help people be in community around that participation. And so we've been really working, doing a lot of testing and focus groups on the back end. One of the other vehicles that we've seen that has been really important to driving turnout has been these district attorney elections. 80% of district attorneys, 80% run unopposed, about 90% are white. We've been trying to really change that, but also communicating about how powerful DAs are to the criminal justice system. So making it really clear. And as a result, we've seen rises in turnout in cities around the country for district attorney elections, and particularly rises among young black people in those races.
And let me say, as we close out this program, those lunches and those dinners and those barbershop conversations are really, really important. But I will say, just, you know, on a personal note, my daughter's, she's a junior here at Howard University. She's got a big schedule and she's registered to vote in Baltimore. And we were on the phone and we're trying to figure out how we can work voting around her class schedule. Mm-hmm. And the best argument that I could give her as a parent about voting is, that's what we do.
Right.
Simple.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do.
Right.
I don't want to hear it. You're going. That's not a fight that I had to have with her. She tried to figure it out. Daddy, I'm going to vote with you. That's what we did. And I think other parents should try to get that done. I want to thank both of you. Dr. Kenesha Grant, always good to see you, Dr. Grant.
Thank you for having me. Great to see you, too.
Absolutely. Rashad Robinson, always good to talk to you. Keep
Likewise.
Up the good work. And I'm sure we will have lots to talk about 1 week from today, Election Day.
Ooh,
that is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, October 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection